I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Mary Welsh Schluter. Mary is the chief executive with Partnership for Innovation in Education. And Mary, as the name implies, your company is an innovator in education. And in fact, you've started a brand new program in Cincinnati schools. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
We actually launched this program in January of 2012. It affected grade 1 through 6 of Kilgore Elementary. And we've been lucky enough to actually get funding and a grant that we just recently got, and hopefully up for other ones that we'll be able to expand it to other Cincinnati public schools. But we have created a first ever program. It's based sort of on a Khan Academy template. It's a first of its kind, both for how it involves students and how it provides revenue back to schools and provides professional development for teachers.
And what does the program teach the students?
When we first started, I actually taught a Harvard Business School case. I am a former business faculty at University of Cincinnati and a corporate marketer. I wanted to actually engage kids in financial literacy. So I started a program called Mustang Mondays at Kilgore, and we actually worked for 10 weeks to provide kids to teach them 3 basic concepts. And those 3 concepts are the 5 P's of marketing, SWOT analysis, and product lifecycle. And so we actually taught them a Harvard Business School case and utilized and applied those 3 concepts. And what came out of that was the capability for kids to actually apply these concepts, but also we brought in NKU, the College for Applied Informatics, and those staff actually allowed us to write an app that is now launched on Android and providing funding back to Kilgore schools with all the upload revenue.
So you're teaching these students some of the basics of business, it sounds
absolutely like. I was told these kids, you know, they're actually learning MBA basics when they're the ages of 6 through 12. So it's a one-of-a-kind for them, but also they learn to apply these, which so many people memorize, but if they don't understand how to apply, then they lose it pretty immediately.
How do you follow up with these kids and make sure that they have understood what you're teaching them?
Well, we actually applied a test before they actually walked into the classroom, and then we apply a test afterwards to see how much they improved. And their improvement was excellent. And I always tell people, with this grant that we got a technology grant. So now we can administer tests with technology, but also we teach them using technology. So we'll have an even better read on what their achievement is and how they are actually applying these concepts in real life.
And your goal is just to make them more financially literate?
Yeah, we actually are looking at financial literacy as a key learning, as a key teaching tool. But also, I always tell people, when you look at a case-based learning overview, which is more project-based, I don't want to use a lot of words here, but essentially you're teaching kids concepts that they can apply in real life. And I always tell individuals that schools really aren't 4 walls anymore. A school is as big as the community that embraces it. And so when we look at financial literacy, we also look at bullying, we look at role play, we look at ethics. We're not teaching them just STEM-aligned concepts, but we are. We're also teaching them how to get along and do well in careers outside of school. We're getting funding. We're looking at going for a K-12 program that both has a STEM alignment and core curriculum alignment. So that's really the aim in the very, very, very near future, in the next few months.
So how do you roll this program out to more schools? Do you have to teach the teachers how to teach the program?
Actually, you do. In many cases, we're looking at professional development for teachers. One great thing about technology is you can actually duplicate your efforts and have technology help teach it.
But if people want to get in contact with you and learn more about this program, what's your contact information?
Sure. I'm at mary@pimedia.org or 513-378-8370.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mary Welsh Schluter. You've introduced a new program to Cincinnati Public Schools that really lets the kids almost go through like a Harvard Business School case study and learn about the 5 P's of marketing and other basic business things. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about why you're doing this.
In many cases, when you look at financial literacy and really career critical thinking skills, everyone asks, how can we teach critical thinking skills? And this is just one example of a project that you can get forward in kids as young as age 6. It's so funny. I have a Harvard Business School professor who asked me, how can you possibly teach something like the 5 P's of marketing to these little kids? And I look at him and I'm like, it's pretty easy. You just use their language. And I can tell you easily over the radio what the 5 P's are. They're people, price, product, promotion, and place. And essentially, if you utilize those five P's and you look at creating a new business, or you look at examining something, or if you're looking at creating a new idea, if you implement those five P's and apply them, you already have a template for creating your own business plan. And in many cases, that's what we teach kids. We have them serve as entrepreneurs. We incubate new ideas at schools, and we help them create a template for how they create that new idea. You don't create small business owners or entrepreneurs who think of new things at the age of 22. You grow them at the age of 5. And that's really what we're trying to do. And it's not just business ideas. It's ideas, you know, improving things at school or improving your community. It's really how do you come up with new ideas? And really, we give kids that a template. Our kids at Kilgore essentially showed how we applied the five P's and the SWOT analysis to the actual Android app. And it's very creative. And the kids came up with all of the marketing, they came up with the ideas, and NKU helped write the code for it.
So they actually did create a business.
Absolutely. And they're seeing how successful it can be. And I always tell people the product life cycle is all about, you know, how you introduce a product and how you see it die and how you see it mature. And the one interesting thing why people ask, well, why are we about cows here? The cash cow is all about where you get the most money, the biggest bang for your buck. And people would talk about how the icon in this Android app talks about moolah. Do you get it?
I wish I had some more moolah.
Don't we all?
Well, Mary, why did Mayor Mallory designate it Lemon Smash Day at Kilgore earlier this year?
And it was such an honor for the Kilgore students and for Pi and for everyone within CPS. We had Councilman Thomas come for Mayor Mallory. We launched it. We had 6 TV stations, several radio stations there, and it was the first of its kind. So he came because this is, again, a program that brings revenue to schools, provides professional development for teachers, and really gets kids engaged. If you tell a child out there that they can help write an app, put their name on it, launch it on Android and Apple, and then see the money or see the revenue that comes back, and then see how the technology it is that actually comes to the school because of it, every child will be engaged by it, which is why numerous other districts around the country and around the world are asking us how we can do this for their school districts, because we're providing a new revenue stream, new opportunity, and essentially an engaging opportunity for students.
Literally, it's people from around the world, isn't it? You told me you've even had inquiries from Russia.
Yeah, it's amazing.
People want to get more information about your company and this innovation. How can they contact you?
www.pimedia.org. Again, pimedia.org or mary@pimedia.org.
Well, thanks for listening to Business Wise. I'm Tom Cooney with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, it's coming to that time of the year when most individuals and businesses are doing their year-end planning. It's a little bit harder this year, though, because we don't know what the tax rates are going to be next year.
It's very difficult to plan when you don't know the rules of the game, isn't it? So the key in my mind is to focus on what we do know and take advantage of those items that we can this year before the clock strikes 12 on December 31st.
One thing we do know is that for businesses, you still have bonus depreciation this year. Last year it was 100%. This year it's 50%. So you can write off 50% of the cost of machinery, equipment, furniture, computers, etc., that you buy for and use for business purposes. Next year, that bonus depreciation won't be there. And unless the law changes, and that's not being talked about as one of the changes. So it probably does make sense to accelerate equipment purchases that you would otherwise be making early next year into this year in order to get the much greater depreciation deduction.
And again, there are very specific rules about what qualifies for bonus depreciation. And along those lines, the same thing's happening with another provision of the tax code called the 179 deduction. And that allows you an immediate expensing of new or used assets used in business that qualify. So for example, in 2012, the maximum amount of 179 deduction is $139,000. Absent any tax change or new legislation, that limit drops to $25,000. So clearly, if you are looking at used equipment, because bonus depreciation really only applies to new equipment, you may want to go ahead and accelerate that purchase into 2012, put it in service before the end of the year so you can take the immediate write-off.
Other year-end tax planning may depend on how you're organized and how you pay tax. If you're a C corporation, your rates are not going up next year, and they may in fact go down if legislation passes later in the year. So the normal things that you would do at year end to postpone income or accelerate deductions still make sense if you're a C corporation.
The key is really understanding what tax implications is going to impact you both this year and next year. And even though we don't know what next year is, we kind of have to do it multiple versions so that you can see what the implication is. Now, Tom, having said that, I am a believer in, you know, a bird in the hand is better than two in a bush. And so if we know that we're going to get a tax reduction this year and it may not be available next year, why wouldn't we take it this year, even if rates do go up a bit?
Yeah, instead of a bird in the hand, it's really a dollar in your pocket rather than the government's, right?
That's exactly right.
But there are some things you may want to think about. For instance, if you're an individual at the upper income levels, chances are you're going to be paying at a higher rate of tax or have less deductions next year.
And certainly that applies to businesses who operate as pass-through entities. And so if your business income is going to be subject to those higher tax rates next year, some very common tax planning that we would normally talk about in terms of deferring income, we may want to do the opposite and accelerate the income into 2012. You just have to look at your own specific circumstance and see what that's going to do, not only to your business income, but is it going to push you up into a higher tax bracket, causing your interest, dividends, and capital gains to be taxed at the higher rate because of the new Medicare tax that's going to go into effect in 2013. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Well, Crystal, as we approach the end of the year, most people are in the holiday spirit. They're thinking about giving. You've noticed how jovial I am lately.
I know.
Because I'm talking to my clients about giving. But of course, we're giving
advice.
I'm giving advice and they're giving money, or even better, stock. Because if they give appreciated stock to charities, they get to deduct the fair market value, assuming they've held that stock for at least a year, which is a much better benefit than if they sell the stock and then pay tax and then have the leftover proceeds to donate.
If you are looking at making a contribution of stock that actually has a loss, you want to do the opposite. You actually want to sell the stock first, take the loss, and then contribute the proceeds to the charity. If you merely contribute the stock that has a loss to the charity, you do not get to take the loss. So it's really important to know whether your asset that you're giving is gain or loss.
And speaking of gains, this may be the last year in our lifetime that you can have capital gains taxed at a 0% or a 15% rate, because the capital gains rates are likely to go up next year. In fact, they're scheduled to go up. But what a lot of people are unaware of is this 0% tax rate on capital gains. And this is particularly important, I think, for retired people who have investments in the stock market, maybe don't have a substantial amount of income. So you could be in the zero tax bracket for your capital gains if you're married and your taxable income is under $70,000.
I mean, zero is a good thing. When you don't have to pay any tax on gains that you actually realize and recognize. This also could apply if you have a loss from your business that's actually reducing your overall income. So again, it just makes a lot of sense to take a look at where you stand so that you don't let this opportunity pass you by.
And even if you're not in that zero tax bracket, this may be a good year to take capital gains if you need to diversify out of a position. Consider doing it this year, because we know that the tax rate's 15% on capital gains this year. It may be 23 or 24 or higher next year.
Yes, and you're referring to the increase in the overall rate from 15 to 20%, but then when you add on the Medicare surtax, it's in the close to 24%. I know it doesn't sound very much fun, but the reality of it is, if you do take the time to plan, you can save a lot of money and actually realize a lot more opportunities that will just not be available next year.
And you want to look at your itemized deductions, too. You know, if you're able to deduct medical expenses, which most people aren't able to do because have insurance and their expenses don't exceed 7.5% of their income. But some people may have had unusual medical expenses. You may have had medical expenses that weren't covered by insurance. You may have a high deductible plan. if you're in that category where you have deductible medical expenses, you should consider trying to bunch them so that you can get more expenses that are deductible this year. In addition, we don't know what's going to happen next year, but one of the things being talked about is some type of limitation on itemized deductions. And we do know that the old limitation, which was an add back of 3% of your itemized deductions once you hit a certain income level, is coming back into law in 2013.
So even though it's may make sense normally to accelerate the deductions into this year, having said what you just mentioned, Tom, it makes it even more applicable. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Todd Feaster. He is the owner and managing partner of Franet. Tell me a little bit about what Franet does. I know that you represent franchises and help people buy franchises.
Right. We represent executives and their families and work with them to help them determine, number one, if business ownership is right for them. Then number two, we take them through our process to help them identify and qualify based on their risk tolerance, their financial profile, and their overall risk profile to see if which business would be right for them.
And you hear a lot of horror stories about people buying businesses that aren't right for them, but you also see a lot of successes of people who have made good matches. What's some of the keys?
The number one key for us, Tom, is to really help the family determine if business ownership is right for them. The latest Gallup poll says that 55% of Americans want to own and operate their own business, yet only 1% do. There's a reason for that. There's a risk tolerance that has to be there. There's an investment level that needs to be there. And it takes a special kind of a person to be a business owner. What we find is that a lot of new business owners have some great transferable skills from the corporate side of the world, yet they don't always translate specifically into being a great business owner. And we really help families navigate that process. And then once we help them navigate that process, we try to match them with a business that is the best fit for them and gives them a great foundation for success.
Some people think franchises are just too expensive to buy into. Do you run into that?
Common misperception. We represent about 120 different franchise businesses, five industries: automotive, retail, food, business to business, and business to consumer. And the automotive and the food, the average price point, including working capital, is about $250,000. And in the business to business and business to consumer businesses we represent, the average price point, including working capital or total investment, is about $150,000.
That sounds like that's an affordable package for many people. Because it's financeable usually, right?
Yeah, it's financeable. However, you know, you have to have collateral to collateralize any kind of a loan. Yet 80% of the people that we work with actually acquire a franchise business through qualified retirement funds. Not taxable and no penalty. And so we have a couple great resources to help them navigate that process also.
Are you finding more people looking to own their own businesses after we've been through this recent recession?
If you look at the numbers or our target, 7 out of the 10 people that acquire a business through us are in transition. 20% are trying to avoid transition. And so we have a lot of people that are looking to come out of the corporate world and take control of their schedule, grab some financial security, and figure out what's best for them and their families.
How do you get paid? I mean, everything costs money. How do you get paid for your services?
I work just like a real estate agent. I'll work with a family and help them identify what business is right for them. So similar to a house, how many bedrooms, what school district, you know, the businesses, what kind of a location, what kind of industry do you want to be in? And I work with them through the process, identify businesses, match them with the business. Then if they buy a business, and only if they buy a business, I get paid. And I get paid by the franchise company.
And it's not exclusive to Cincinnati, right? You have a wider area than just Cincinnati.
Yeah, we're a franchise ourselves. We're a 25-year-old business. Franet is headquartered in Louisville. We have 70 owner-operators like myself throughout the United States. I own and operate here in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, and the Dayton markets.
I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Todd Feaster. Todd is the owner and managing partner of Franet. And Todd, I know Franet helps people find franchises that they can purchase. What is an attribute that you look for in a franchise that would make a good business for someone?
We are a 25-year-old business, and we have a very strict process that we go through to allow franchise businesses to come into our inventory. We're really looking for a good, strong business that has good leadership, great experience, good name recognition within franchising itself, and really just great process and procedures that somebody can step into and execute against.
Well, there is a cost to a franchise versus starting a business from scratch. What's the benefit of going the franchise route?
Well, the benefit of a franchise route is that you're in business with other people. You're the owner-operator, but you're not in business by yourself. You have a network of other business owners throughout the United States that are going through the same experiences that you're going through, and you have a network of people. So the big benefit is that you're not in business by yourself. You're in business with other people. Yet, you're in control of your schedule and control of your financials, and you have the ability to go out and execute against a plan. So a good franchise is going to bring you a great marketing plan, a great supply chain, and a really great process for you to come in and execute against.
What is the typical client that you would see at Franet looking for a franchise?
You know, if you look at our demographic across the United States, it is a 49-year-old male that's been downsized twice. Now, that's the bullseye. That's right in the middle. But you know, again, we work with families and individuals, executives that are in transition, people that have been downsized, looking to avoid transition or getting downsized and looking for that next 10, 15, 20-year period for their career. Yet one trend that we are seeing since new graduates coming out of college aren't able to find jobs and career opportunities, we do have some parents that are investing in businesses for their sons and daughters to come in and run, gain that practical experience, build asset value so they're not in the basement.
What if I wanted to keep my job, my day job, the one I have as an accountant, and buy a franchise or invest in a franchise? Does that make sense for some people?
Absolutely. You know, there are a number of business opportunities out there that are meant for semi-absentee owners. An owner that wants to come in and start a business, have multiple locations, put 10 to 15 hours in a week or every 2 weeks, and hire a general manager or a front-end person to run three or four locations for them. Very doable, a great business model, great alternative income.
You know, I think when most people think of franchises, they think of fast food restaurants. But there's lots of other types of businesses that are franchised as well.
We just placed somebody in business in the Dayton market that has a cloud-based IT consulting company that focuses on very small businesses. We have online marketing consulting services. We have learning centers, the typical fitness centers, handyman services, and a number of businesses in and around the aging baby boomer population.
Are there any businesses that do well even when the economy does poorly?
Yeah, unfortunately, even in a recession, my hair does need to get cut. So, you know, there are a number of businesses. The average age of an automobile on the road right now is 10 years. Automotive services, people aren't buying new homes. They're fixing homes up. They're upgrading their homes. So there's some really great, there's some services out there that people continue to use and need and have a high demand for, even in a down economy.
Well, Todd, if people are interested in learning more about franchises, what's your contact information for them to get in touch with you?
You know, the best way to reach me is to go ahead and call my cell phone at 513-543-3325. Or if they want some additional information, they can go to www.frannet.com.
I'm Tom Cooney with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Mike Brown. Mike works with FindLaw as an internet marketing consultant. And you work in law firms. You help lawyers in law firms put together a marketing strategy over the internet. Correct, Mike?
That's right. I work with law firms, and I help them with their web strategy. It doesn't matter if you're a law firm, an accounting firm, or whatever your business is. You should have a web strategy. There are plenty of people standing at your door wanting to build you a website. But you have to understand, what is my strategy? What is the goal of their site? Is it to simply confirm their business because of referral business? Is it to be found by people who have never heard of them before, but know they need them? If I need to buy flowers, I'm going to search maybe for flowers in Cincinnati. I don't know certain flower shops, but I should find them when I do that search.
It is true. In this society where we live today, when someone wants to find out information, they'll just go to Google or some search engine, type in a word, a company's name, and boom, there's all kinds of information about them or the company, but also their website. How does a company make sure that their website is doing what you just said, working the best for them?
That's a good point, because years ago, people would open a book, the Yellow Pages, before the internet. Now, they do a search in a search engine. If you've put your strategy together correctly, then your content, your local, Google Plus has a local mapping that shows you where businesses are if you've given it a geography. If you didn't give a geography in your search, Google has to decide how local was that search's intent from a scale of 1 to 10. So there are strategies to help your site show up first, second, or third in Google when people do searches. There are a lot of businesses that try to do internet marketing on the cheap. And they say, all I need is a website. I just need to get a domain and a website. One of the most well-known companies throughout the world is located right here in Cincinnati, be Procter & Gamble. And they have made their history is built on branding and imagery. Companies forget that they need to look as good or better online than they do in person. Your brand is your firm, your service, your product, whatever it is. So you need to look as good online as you do offline. But you also need to be found by people who have no idea what you do, but know they need something that you sell or provide as a service. So I think branding and search engine marketing being found is very, very important.
When you go into organizations, you can actually help them evaluate their strategy, take a look at where they are today, and then what they would like their website to be in the future?
Absolutely. So you get the goals of the firm, and you understand where, when I work with law firms, I might sit down with the firm and say, you know, what areas of law are you practicing today? What do you really want tomorrow? What would you ideally like to have come in the door? And when they give you that information, then you put together a strategy that includes a website. But it's going to include content pages that are specific to the types of cases they want. But you might need video. You should probably consider a blog. You should consider social media. Very important this day and age.
So there's just so many things that you need to think about. And certainly, like you mentioned before, this is not something that's intuitive. It may make sense to consult with a professional. And if folks would like to get information about you and your company, Mike, what's your website?
They can visit me online at CincinnatiLawyerMarketing.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mike Brown. Mike is an internet marketing consultant for law firms, and you work for a company called FindLaw. But we're here today to talk about internet marketing and online marketing and everything that goes into that picture, which is such a vast conversation these days.
The internet, since Al Gore invented it 10 years ago, has changed dramatically, and search engines have changed it. So there are a lot of moving parts now to the internet. Besides, in 2002 or 3, somebody just having a website that had their address and phone number was impressive. Today, the internet has a lot of different components. A website itself, search engine optimization, local, Google+, video, blogs, social media. Blogs and social media are critical aspects of today's web strategy for companies, and a lot of them ignore it.
People don't even know how to do it in many cases. They don't even know how to put together a creative and effective social marketing strategy.
There are plenty of business owners that would love to do it. In fact, it keeps a lot of them up at night, but they don't know how to do it.
And how to do it effective. It's one thing just to have a Facebook or LinkedIn site. It's another thing on how to really use it to enhance and propel your business.
The last thing you want to do is open up a social media property such as Facebook or LinkedIn and not pay attention to it and just open it and have it on your website. That's not good. You're here at Northern Kentucky University. There's no shortage of students who would love to, on a part-time basis, do your social media for you. Mm-hmm. So there are there's no shortage of people that you could lean on to help you with that. But why do you do social media? The reason you do it is because in a firm or in a company, you have people that love your company and that are in your network. Well, you want those people to stay in touch with you. You want to stay front of mind. That's what social media does.
And a lot of these things you just mentioned, though, it's important that they're all integrated and everybody's singing out of the same songbook, right? So that it looks the same every time somebody goes to either a blog or a social media site or our website.
You do want to be consistent. And again, that gets back to branding. So you want your brand to be consistent across all the platforms. It's very easy to do. You know, you could start with a blog as part of your social media. Blogs are wonderful because as an accountant, or I work with attorneys, you don't have to tell people you're an expert. You can show them your expertise by writing about your topic. Mm-hmm. So when you blog about something, it makes you an expert on your topic.
What's the first step someone should do as they try to sort through all of the various types of social media, internet marketing types of strategies?
Obviously, talk to somebody who knows. Look at your competitors online and look at what they're doing and visit their properties if you want to get an idea if you're doing it on your own. I really recommend talking to a consultant that understands these properties and can boil it down to make it really simple, because it is not that difficult, but it is really important. I went to a firm's Facebook page the other day that I was recommended to. When I went to their Facebook page, it showed me five of my friends that liked that page and were connected to that company. And it helped me to make the decision to actually call and hire that company. So that's what social media can really do for you. Have somebody who knows about it help you with it, or hire somebody to do it. You know, your time is valuable as a business owner. And you don't really want to waste a bunch of your time doing something you don't know about. So hire somebody to do it.
And what do they say? You only have one time to make a good first impression.
That is 100% an accurate statement. So make it a good one.
So again, if folks listening today would like to learn more about internet marketing, reach you, what's your website?
They'd be happy to visit me online at www.cincinnatilawyermarketing.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Ellen Cavanaugh and Angela Parker, and they have a company called Your Event Centers, LLC. And I think this is just an amazing concept as a mom, a working mom,
yes,
to actually have been able to take my child to an event, to a party during tax season, and have professionals come in who will engage them, play with them in a very fun and interactive way.
Exactly.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
How did you get into this? Because I know, Ellen, you are a retired individual from AT&T. Mm-hmm. Angela, you are an accountant. How do you go from there to basically being charge of fun for children?
After retirement, I was looking forward to just finding something to interact with, working with children. I stumbled across a blog about a wedding sitter, which is actually a babysitter at a wedding. So after much research, I went ahead and stumbled across the event sitting world. Bingo. That's
sure.
Where my niche is. I just love and have a passion for working with children.
Well, I don't think I mentioned that you are Angela's mother.
Yes,
so
I
it's
am.
A mother-daughter tag team
yes,
here.
I am.
Yes.
Well, how much fun has it been working together?
Oh, it's been a learning experience.
Yes.
We never talk mother-daughter things anymore, and I think we bump heads more so now than ever in my life.
So. I just call that collaboration and working out the best of the ideas, right?
Exactly.
So Tom and I are married, right? And so we have those collaboration of ideas, which he might call bumping of the heads from time to time as well.
Yes, every once in a while you don't agree with my good ideas.
That's right. So the ages for the children are what, between?
Newborn and 12 years old. So we do provide age-appropriate activities for all age groups. At the end of the event, all the children get goodie bags, which are also age-appropriate. So all of our things that we bring to the event are, once again, age-appropriate. So for the children newborn to 2 years old, we're bringing the pack-and-plays, the bouncy seats, the high chairs, all of the good stuff. And then for the older children, we're bringing the toys. We have play kitchens, dollhouses, dinosaurs, race cars, choo-choo trains, all the good stuff.
It's wonderful.
Play-Doh. I mean, we're painting. We're just making messes.
So you don't have to have any guilt about leaving your child at home while you go off to an event.
Exactly, because this is the best of both worlds.
So how's it gone so far? Have you found good reception to this idea? Have you found events that will sponsor you?
Yes, we have. We've been around since July of 2011, so we've been around a little over a year. We had our first event in February of this year, 2012, and we've had 16 events so far. So our main thing is getting the word out there. Once people know what we do and what our qualifications are, we'll be well received.
Well, speak to the qualifications, because all of your staff are very well qualified.
Yes, they are.
Of course, our event sitters are our employees, not just contractors. They're FBI and BCI screened. We're all over 18. We're first aid and CPR certified, and have a plethora of child care experience, all of us.
And on top of that, I'd like to add that we do use the Ohio child to staff ratio as a guideline, but we always go above and beyond that. So we're doubling those ratios to provide that interactive and engaging environment.
So if someone's listening out there today, they'd love to take advantage of this for their event, how can they reach you?
They can contact us at 513-330-5998, our phone number, or visit our website at youreventsitters.llc.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today our guests are Ellen Cavanaugh and Angela Parker. They're with Your Event Sitters LLC, which, as the name implies, is an event sitting service. You actually provide child care for events, hotels, those types of things, so people can go and bring their children and still have be able to be off in the adult world while their children are well taken care of.
Yes.
But something else you all are doing now is with Bad Girl Ventures, you're one of their finalists for their 2012 class. What made you decide to get involved with Bad Girl Ventures?
Well, we knew that with Bad Girls, it was a way to get our name out there. From as a new startup company, we needed an avenue to be able to project our company a step further than what we were doing. So we wanted to use it, one, from a marketing standpoint, but two, to also get the business and the understanding how to build our business and how to build a solid foundation to grow. So we thought that those were two great opportunities. So we applied and we were selected as one of the finalists. So.
That's wonderful. And I know one of the ladies that you work with is Peggy Gronke. And I know she's very proud of you, and
yes,
she thinks that you guys are going to go very far in your business here.
We love Peggy.
Just to step back a moment, Bad Girl Ventures is a not-for-profit organization that helps women-owned small businesses really take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. They provide education, and they also provide loans to winners of each class, and often, even if you're not a, quote, winner, you still are often eligible to get a loan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One of their focuses is to be able to allow women-owned businesses who wouldn't normally be able to get loans through a bank to be able to access those funding or financing needs. So we were in the running, or are in the running, to receive, or hopefully receive, a $25,000 loan, which would be great from a marketing standpoint to help our business take it to the next level. So,
what do you plan on doing with that, Ellen?
We plan on building our brand, and of course, I use some of the money to market, to buy more equipment, to just get our name more out there.
Mm-hmm. And what has been the most positive thing that you've experienced through your road in Bad Girl Ventures?
Our most positive thing has been just networking with other women who are struggling, or not even necessarily struggling, but who are trying to grow their businesses also. Hear their experiences, be able to compare and take notes with ours, and see how their experiences and achievements can help us grow also.
And Ellen, from your point of view, you're a mother-daughter team. I don't think Tom mentioned that right out the gate, but you are a mother-daughter team.
Yes.
How cool is it to work with your daughter?
It's been a challenge, but I enjoy working with my daughter. I wouldn't want any other business partner. She goes over and above. She gives 110% of her time, and she just we both share that passion that we have for working with children. So I really enjoy working with her.
And I know you're Ellen. You mentioned that you are responsible for all the social media, all that type of method to get your name out there. How is that working for you? Are you using in the social media helping?
Yes, it's been great. We are on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and we network. We're the networking queens, is what we call ourselves. It's been great, and it works.
And so what do you hope? I mean, what's your hope and dream, Angela, for this company, say, in 2 to 5 years?
Yeah, and in 2 to 5 years, we plan to actually reach all of our service markets. Currently, we're servicing Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. We'd like to be in all of the major cities, so Dayton, Cincinnati.
Do you see this as a franchise opportunity?
Licensing, maybe. Licensing, yes. Franchising, I don't know if we want to go that route yet.
And if folks want to reach you for their wonderful events, what's your contact information?
You can reach us by phone at 513-330-5998 or our website at www.youreventsittersllc.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.